Now, IWG, who are the operator of Regus and Spaces and the world's largest flexible workplace provider, are expanding their footprint in Ireland in order to meet the growing demand for hybrid working. The company was set up by the very entrepreneurial Mark Dixon, who now finds himself on the UK's rich list. So for this week's Executive Chair, I got to chat to Mark earlier this week over Zoom.
News Talk's Executive Chair.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
Mark Dixon, he's the founder and CEO of IWG PLC. Mark, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
In this interview, we always like to get a bit of information behind the man. The business is obviously very interesting. We'll come to that in a second. But can we start in Essex? You were educated in Rainsford High School. Tell us about your early years.
For my earliest memories, from about 11 years old, I had a paper round. I wanted to be in business, and I was inspired by stories I read in the newspapers. So I started up businesses at 12, 13, 14. I was always doing businesses, making a start at high school, you know, after school, all the time.
Right. And did you find yourself then going straight into the workplace after school? Did you start working immediately?
Immediately. Well, for me, I mean, much to the disappointment of my father and my headmaster, I left school on the first day I could. I actually left home that day as well. And I went into business. That was almost immediately from leaving school.
Right. And the early days or the early employment were around retail, wholesale foods, that sort of area. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I was doing Deliveroo and Just Eat in whenever it was. What was it been? 1976.
Good man.
So, but it wasn't. That was before the internet and before mobile phones. So, I had a simple little business I started at 16, which was called Dial a Snack, and that was people phoned up, ordered their sandwiches, and I delivered them to offices. It was simple business. I couldn't drive, so I was delivering them on a push bike, one of those butcher's bikes. It was a good little business. Didn't make any money, unfortunately, because no one had told me that you needed to make a profit, but I had very happy customers. So it was a good start, good education.
How did you find your way then into the sort of property end of business? What was your first real bricks and mortar type job?
Well, overall, I've done 10 businesses in my sort of career so far. And I sort of got into property when I moved to Belgium in 1988. I had a very big bakery business, which I sold, and I wanted to do something European. I thought there was bigger opportunities in Europe, UK, very competitive, Europe, many more opening. So I moved to Brussels and started a business there in property. This was doing furnished apartments for secretaries for the European Union. So, because the European Union was all getting established and there was, plenty of houses if you're an executive or someone high up, but nothing for the secretaries. So it's like a done well, very small apartments. That's how I got into it. And from there, I got into IWG. What was, Regus was the first brand in 1989 in Brussels.
Okay. And that effectively was a different way of office work, You said it was based on the observation of people having their meetings around coffee shop tables and with the challenge of competing with the noise of local traffic. So yeah. It was a kind of a new type of office model.
Yeah, it was, look, for, it was that. But also it was the property industry was so much against the customer. I mean, the property industry doesn't think of the people that pay the money as customers. So all my experiences with having industrial warehouses, factories, offices, whatever, very bad experience as a customer. So I just thought there was a better way, that if you could provide people with ready-to-use offices, ready-to-use meeting rooms, that there would be a market for that, and make it easy. So, you know, no lease, no commitment, no, everything's ready. Take it for however long you want, and we'll do all the services for you. So it's you just put your people in, focus on your business, and we'll do the rest for you. That was the original idea, and it worked. I mean, it worked from pretty much day one.
Amazing. And again, now it's built to 3,500 locations globally, 12,000 staff. So like the scale of the operation now from those early days in the Regis Group, the growth of the business has been quite staggering.
Well, it depends which way you look at it, Bobby. So me being the person I am, I'm a bit disappointed. You know, so yes, we've got 3,500, but really we should have 35,000. The problem is every now and then we get these recessions and pandemics we have to deal with. And so we have to stop for a while and get things sorted out, move on again. But no, overall, you know, you have to remember when I started the first one, it was definitely before the internet and definitely before real, you know, proper mobile smartphones. Their phones were huge in those days.
Yeah.
Now, technologies just made people able now to work from anywhere. So distributed work, hybrid working is where it's at now. So, you know, now we're in absolute hyper growth mode as we start to sort of provide workplaces near where people live. That's where they want to be.
I was going to ask you about that again with the new way of working now, as you say, the hybrid model, you know, your business and the flexibility that it offers, you know, as you say, if you're in, say, suburban locations and somebody can dip into a serviced office once or twice a week, it could be the perfect model.
But that's what they're doing. So, you know, we've signed up since the beginning of the year about 2 million people, additional 2 million. And that's globally. We know we're in 120 countries. But companies, so you look at the drivers, it's what companies want because it's what their people want. And they're saving about 50% on their costs because they're putting people saying, well, why do I need to bring everyone to the center of the city? They can work near where they live, some of them from home, some people can't. I'll give them an office locally. So it opens, you know, it really reduces costs. You don't have as much fixed space. You can hire more people because, you know, the problems, and, you know, I've had many businesses trying to get people that happen to be within commuting distance of a building somewhere is quite difficult.
Yeah.
But if you can employ them from anywhere in the country or anywhere in the world, and give them an office near where they live, then you can get better people. And it's what a lot of people want. They don't want to spend an hour a day commuting. They say, well, I'll do my job, but can I do it without the hour a day commuting? Sometimes 2 hours.
Mark, that the business has been grown, you want to grow it by franchise. How does your franchise model actually work?
Well, we've growing it a lot already with franchising. So franchising is we find a partner in a town or a village who either has a property, sometimes they own properties, or sometimes it's a business person that maybe has other franchise operations, and we partner up with them to open in that location.
Right.
And you know, this has been very, very successful in terms of bringing really great business people together with us so that we do it together. Because, you know, we signed up one this week, for example, in Northern Thailand. That was 40 centers in Northern Thailand. And, you know, a fantastic business group there, really good entrepreneurs. They will do that area. They know it like the back of their hand. And they have lots of other businesses. So we're partnering with these people. This is what will give us the 35,000 we're looking for. We just can't do it all on our own.
Okay. So typically the franchisee might own the property and then you bring in the infrastructure per se.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Right. Or they buy a property or they lease a property. So it's all of those things. Some, you know, we've partnered with people that have chains of restaurants, chains of coffee shops, chains of hotels. And, you know, it's just another one for them to do. So they added on. And, you know, they're very good at running it. So we get much more accelerated growth, and you get good quality, even in the smaller towns.
So what do you think then will happen, city centre offices, you know, that there's been a lot of investment in many cities right across the world. Is the future not so bright for those sort of ultra-urban locations?
Well, the short answer is that depends. So it depends on whether it's a livable city or not a livable city.
Yeah.
And I'll come back to what that is in a moment. And it depends whether, you know, cities are going to have to reinvent themselves to be livable cities. So the cities that are badly affected are the ones where the commuters have to come from a long way away. Places like London, San Francisco, Los Angeles, where it takes a long time to commute and it's very expensive to live near where you work.
Yeah.
You know, it's impossible for normal workers to live near to their office in central London. It's just impossible. So they have very expensive, very time-consuming commutes. So London has to reinvent itself, as an example, by creating affordable accommodation in the city so that people, you know, it becomes much more localized.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you know, those cities will slowly, they'll still be important places and they're still very good meeting places. But the days of having an office building with 1,000 people coming to it from all over the place to work in a central London building, those days will gradually fade away because no one wants to waste an hour a day commuting. It's not about do I work from home or do I work from an office. It's just commuting.
Yeah. So totally agree with you.
It's a really simple equation. It's not rocket science. So
No, I get exactly what you're saying.
So, and we've seen, very interesting, during the crisis, those cities that were livable, places like Copenhagen, cheap commuting, people live locally, housing prices are reasonable locally, almost unaffected by COVID, relatively speaking, compared to somewhere like London or these others, New York and so on.
Yeah. So, listen, I wanted to ask you about the wine business because I know it's a side venture for you, but again, you don't enter into things lightly. You have a number of, I suppose, wine-making operations on both sides of the channel. And I'm told that you're one of the largest rosé producers. Is that correct?
That is correct.
In Provence, yeah?
It's my weekend job.
Tell us more about that.
Well, look, it started off quite small and it sort of is grown into, you know, we're doing about 6 million bottles. But, you know, it's organic. You know, we're doing, and what interests me, so it's a business, but it's also a passion, is basically organic, sustainable agriculture. So we've got, you know, minimum carbon footprint. It's a really interesting experiment. And we're doing that both in Provence. We're near to Saint-Tropez in Provence. Also got hotels, restaurants. So it's a big plan. Unfortunately, it's going to take a while. So I'm trying to recreate Napa Valley here in Provence.
Wow.
And it's working piece by piece, you know, very, you know, it takes time. And I'm doing the same in the UK. We've got the biggest vineyard in the UK. It's about 1,000 acres of vines in Kent, Sussex and Essex. So around that, the dry part of the UK. So, all organic. And, you know, I think there's a big future for British wine. It's fantastic quality. And, you know, it's, we know that's growing quickly as well.
Okay. And finally, can I ask you then, Mark, about your business, IWG, coming to Ireland?
Yeah, well, Ireland, we came there about 25 years ago.
That's 26 right.
Years ago. And I can remember the first building we had there. But no, our business in Ireland, we've grown it in Dublin, we're in Limerick, we're in Cork, and we're doing more cities now because, again, Ireland's a place where, you know, there's lots of great places to live that aren't Dublin. And so, you know, at the moment, all the good jobs typically would be in Dublin. They're going to spread and people are going to want to be in other parts of the country. So it's our job. And we will do this with franchise partners to, you know, to open up Ireland to flexible work. Good quality, close to where people live, every town, every vantage point between villages, so that people can just work from anywhere. That's what, you know, that will be the future.
Okay. Well, look, we look forward to your expansion here in Ireland. You're a fascinating character. I've enjoyed our conversation this morning. Good luck with the business, IWG, and indeed, good luck with the rosé winemaking.
Super. Thanks very much, Bobby. Really appreciate it.
All right, Mark. Lovely to talk to you.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.